everybody. Happy Monday night. Today is August 28th, 2023. We are across the pitch. I am back this week, finally, after a nice, much-needed rest last Monday. I am Mike Barrera. I'm also joined by my two fellow co-hosts, Dave Miller and Jose Nunez. Dave, just because you're wearing the Kelly green, I have to go to you. Let me see. You got what's called Reggie White on today. Look at that. Looking sharp, Dave. How you doing in England today?
Yeah, good. Obviously, it was at Wembley yesterday for AEW's event, All In at Wembley Stadium, which was awesome. Incredible sporting event. But, I mean, hey, I'm glad to be here, sitting here, speaking some union.
Absolutely. Jose, I want to shoot to you next. How are you doing over there, buddy?
Catching up, you know, going out to DC, and a thank you to Todd. He was kind enough to allow me and Skylar, and two other content creators, to meet him. And he drove down to DC. The three of us went. We took a couple of pictures. I put a little video together, but it was a blast, man. This was my first away game as part of the press or a content creator credentialed, I guess is the way I'm trying to say it. But it was a blast, man. And you know, I was there for Leagues Cup, covering two other teams that had nothing to do with the union. So it was great to catch up with the DC folks there that run their press. Shout out to Brian Reese, who made it so simple for me to be able to just, you know, apply, get in, get out. So catching up, I think I strolled back into the house on Sunday at like 1:45, 2 o'clock. And by the time I was done making my video quotes that posted the next day, I think it was like 3:30 in the morning. So I'm tired.
Well, listen, last week, like I said, I couldn't make the show last week, but we did have a guest last week. His name was Mario Amaya of the Bad Hombres FC podcast. So I want to say a shout out again to Mario for joining us last week. I appreciate it, filling my void there as a third panel member here. But listen, we have a lot to discuss today. First, the union took care of business down in DC. They won 3-1. Also, Pat Bernard says, hello, Patrick. Nice seeing you, man. I appreciate you always chime in with our stuff. Then, of course, on Wednesday, we have the match against Toronto in Toronto. And then the much-anticipated rematch against Red Bulls since the Leagues Cup PK shootout that we had only a couple weeks ago. So a lot to talk about tonight. But first and foremost, Jose, I'll go to you first because you were in D.C. So let's hear about your experience at Audi Field as well as your thoughts on the 3-1 win, which I am not as over the moon about.
Sure.
So I'm going to shoot to you first.
No, my experience was great. You know, if we sort of want to go with like the touristy route for a little bit, it's a beautiful space. When I went down there for Leagues Cup, I was coming in very, very hot. I actually walked into the press box 5 minutes into the Pumas Querétaro game. So I didn't really get to walk around, and it was pitch dark and raining a little bit / misting, you know, that annoying mist that just gets in your glasses, but doesn't get your body wet type of thing. So I didn't really get to experience it, but this time around with Skylar and Todd, we were able to stroll in at around 5, and we had to wait actually 20-30 minutes to get the press people to get their table situated, which kudos to the Philadelphia Union for giving actual lanyards and passes that you can hang. The DC United folks this year sort of did like the hospital thing where like they write it on a patch and you wear it.
Wow, that's disappointing.
which is not great for safekeeping, right? Maybe it's a little corny on my end, but I've been sort of keeping all of them together, just, you know, storing them. It makes me, you know, feel good about the access I've had, or like sort of like keepsakes, right? Don't ever take it for granted, per se. But overall, what a beautiful stadium, you know, a really, really beautiful structure, very, very good points of view. Their Heineken deck is beautiful. I posted a gigantic panoramic photo from one of the seats, if you're able to get a chair and sit over at the bar deck, whatever you want to call it. So it's a very pretty stadium. Their concourse, though, is probably what I would say the best part of that stadium in terms of, you know, at Subaru Park, if you got to go to the bathroom or get food, you're very much rubbing shoulders with people, especially on busy games like shoot Miami, or if you go to the Eastern Conference final, or really any playoff game. Not the case here, right? It's so wide. I would say it's double the width of what we have at Subaru Park. So it's a beautiful stadium, really, really nice. Wi-Fi is wonderful for press stuff. It's probably three times better than what we have at Subaru Park, and maybe that's just a location thing.
That's the Wi-Fi there sucks, but go ahead.
but overall, man, it was a beautiful place. It was a beautiful day. Could not have asked for a better day. Maybe a little too hot, as I was unfortunately wearing jeans again and a short sleeve t-shirt. But overall, I gotta say, you know, just how powerful it is to greet somebody, right, and appreciate their work. And that's exactly what happened, right? As soon as we walked out of the car, there was a show listener / person who follows me on Twitter, reads my dumb stuff that I put out there, and said, "Hey, how are you? You want to eat?" And, you know, offered me ribs and offered me barbecue and a beer and soda. So it was incredibly touching. So I just want to say thank you to everybody, and honestly as well, thank you to all the fans that traveled. I'm not even joking when I say that section was at 112 and 113, 95% Philadelphia Union, which is intended, right? That's the away section. So imagine, what's the corner for us? 133, right? For
133.
Imagine that, but like four times its size, maybe five times. That's how many Union fans were there. It was awesome. And as I mentioned on Twitter, probably the Union fans are the sole reason that stadium wasn't last in terms of attendance for the rankings this week. So overall, I recommend it if you're ever able to go down to DC. And Mike, we got to drag you out there next year.
I need to go to any away game. I've never been to an away game. I'm embarrassed to say that. Either I have had work issues, or obviously I'm a father, so child issues that can't get. I need to go down. I need to get it. And by the way, Steve Roth says hello. Hi, Steve. Thanks for joining us tonight. Jose, by the way, to your point, I also keep all my credentials as a.
Oh, okay.
My entire upstairs counter has all my lanyards and stuff from the CONCACAF to Leagues Cup to all this, in the early stage where you got that red little square.
Yep. But it was great, man. I cannot recommend it. If you're a fan thinking about making a trip to either New York's, New England's probably manageable too at 5 hours, which probably sounds nuts to Dave in a way too, right? With the highway system being as bad as it is here compared to maybe England and the public transportation. I cannot recommend it enough. And honestly, if you're on Facebook or on Twitter, follow the Sons of Ben, there's always someone that's going. So Toronto, I know that there's a good handful of people that are making the as Jim said, it pilgrimage, making the trip up to Toronto. So connect with people, network, get to know one another, and ultimately be loud for the guys.
Well, I mean, I know Nashville's been a pretty popular spot for obvious party reasons, along with just, you know, it's not too far away. I've always wanted to go to Nashville.
Cheap flights.
Yeah, Geodis Park seems like a great place to go. I would like to go to Columbus, too. That seems like a fun place. Now Cincinnati's starting to, obviously, as they're playing better, seems to be more desirable for people to go to. But definitely an away match is in my future. It just
I've heard great things about Charlotte as well. Just a pretty area. But I don't think we need to hash out too much about Atlanta as well, right? It's always on the news about how affordable it is, where like $20 gets you a 3-course meal in their concourse versus a beer and maybe napkins at Subaru Park.
Yeah, and not the good kind of napkins either.
No.
So besides the atmosphere, and I'm glad to hear you had a good experience in the press box and all. Let's talk about the game, though. We had three goals on this match. We had Michael Uwa scoring again, consecutive matches. He scored against Monterrey as well, their B team in the Leagues Cup, third place game. We also had a Jack McGlynn score off a beautiful Jose Martinez run down the sideline, which, Dave, I know you are just thrilled by. And then lastly, of course, as always, Gazlog had a PK. So, Jose, I want to hear your thoughts on the goals, but the game as a whole, because, again, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, I was thrilled by the outcome, not so much thrilled by the way we got to that outcome.
I think I saw a lot of positives. I think the main one that sticks to me, and I did ask Jim about it, was Nate Harriel. I think he did an incredible job at defending against a huge talent in that of Pirani, who is, you know, on loan from Santos in Brazil. And, you know, Jim, I'm starting to notice that Jim likes to refer to Transfer Market online as a way to literally gauge players in a way, right? Giving them monetary value, I guess. but Jim certainly rates Pirani, and even talking to Carl Robinson, who's the assistant coach for DC, and Russell Canoes, both rated Pirani very, very highly in their short time with him. So to see, as Jim mentioned, sort of, you know, yes, he was wrong-footed by him a couple of times, but eventually he sorted it out and was able to figure it out and kept them pretty overall. I would say that it's also good to see some more players get involved, right? To get Ua back in the scoring sheet and seeing the front line sort of getting back to last year's standards of press, yeah. Right? That incredible press. And you could argue, and I would probably put a lot of weight on just really bad DC United defending, which is sort of a new thing for us from them this year, right? Especially after two goalless draws that really kept us at bay. And Leon Flock, you know, I'm not sure that the circumstances were great for it to come in like mid-game, you know, not really warmed up, probably just told out of nowhere in the sidelines of like, hey, you got to go warm up. Martinez is not feeling great. Brujo has to come out, and then being tossed in there. Probably I would say that he was a big shining moment for that team, but I'm sure we're going to touch on him. But
yeah,
just how easily DC United could have had two or three on the night had they actually, you know, had Benteke actually taken care of some opportunities, maybe Pirani been a little bit more used his opportunities a little bit better. But overall, it's good to see these guys score goals and start breaking down stingy defenses that have frustrated them over the last couple of matches against them.
Absolutely. Dave, how are you? I know you just got done watching the game this afternoon, so it's nice and fresh in your brain today. What's your thoughts on the outcome there?
Again, I think it's a big win. A win that, you know, was very much needed, especially with Cincinnati slipping up. I think it was last week, wasn't it? Yeah. You know, 7 days ago or 10 days ago, whenever it was. Yeah, kept within distance. You've gone up to second now in the Eastern Conference. That was another quite a big thing for the team. But again, I think good to see that it was a bit more free flowing in the attack. You know, it wasn't stagnated. There was a lot of opportunities that the team actually had, not just created, but, you know, clear cut chances, which, as we've seen many away games this year, have been few and far between. But I think it was great to see that they were so expansive in attack. But I think the main concern was how poor the team was defensively. I think that's probably which you weren't too impressed with either, Mike, because I feel like there were so many clear-cut chances that were given for DC United. Not just DC working their way in, working their way up to the penalty area, but like in transition, the Union looked so bad defensively. Like, you could literally just cut them open with one pass. You saw it in multiple occasions in the first half when the game was a bit stretched. Union really struggled with numbers. There was plenty of free players in and around the box for DC United. I think they were, even like with crosses into the box, when it's like a 3-on-2 or 2-on-3 situation. The ball came in, and there was no one around Benteke, and if the touch was better, perhaps a chance could have been created for it, but luckily sort of scuffed at it. And I mean, I think it's probably the most concern. That probably is the main concern thing is how fragile the defenses look, not just in that game, but perhaps towards the back end of that Leagues Cup. I think, again, I mean, we saw it in the Red Bulls game and the Miami game, how the back three sort of got torn apart a bit and torn to shreds and taken advantage of. And it has crept into this game. So I mean, even against Monterrey, it was their B team. They had some very, very good chances, which you wouldn't typically see from a Union team in that situation.
Agreed, and I think one of the moments you mentioned was early on. I can't remember the player who did. I think it was a Durkin, one of the DC players in the middle. He had a wide open chance right in between Leon and Kai, and he just basically whiffs it. But if he gets even a half decent touch on that ball, that's going past Andre Blake, and now you're looking at a 2-1 or whatever the score was game. I think it was 2-0 at the time. But then you look at the Benteke chance later on in the match, and Andre Blake somehow keeps it out of the net and then hits Glessens in the head, and he obviously has the goal line stand there. Then you did have that one goal later on in the match. Then you had the offside goal that got called. So, DC legitimately could have made it 3-3.
It was really funny to be in the press box and hearing the gasps of the DC press when Benteke was trying to jam that in there and Andre Blake was saying, no, no, no. And you just hear the, oh, what? It's too funny.
And listen, credit to Glessens, who has been stepping up. And every time that Benteke has played against us, Glesson seems to have a pretty solid performance overall. And last night he got the yellow card, which was just ridiculous. If you guys didn't see the match, his stop on that attack from DC was 1,000% textbook. And then he gets a second touch afterwards, gets the ball back, and somehow it gets called a yellow card. Now, I don't know if the league can overturn yellow cards at all, because I know there's like a yellow card accumulation. You'd be risk worrying about that next match.
No, but Jim said as much. He said, I wish I could fight that and overturn it, because I think I would. You know, I would absolutely. And again, we talk about Jim and his decorum, right, and the way that he treats players, talks about officials. He was actually really complimentary of this game's official and saying that he's one of the best, but everybody makes mistakes. And I think he made one with that yellow card, which is, again, very rare to hear from Jim, I think, in my opinion, in the time that I've been doing press conferences with you guys. So, yeah.
Yeah. Todd Lewis from the Free Kick joins and jokingly says, can we address the elephant in the room and discuss why Dave Mike is fine now, but was quiet for his – come on, Dave. Again, this is Todd Lewis from the Free Kick. By the way, Todd's the best, okay? Can I just say that? His stuff is awesome. I like his goal evaluations videos. He started doing that again with MLS back, so if you didn't check that out – I didn't actually get a chance to watch today's, but he just posted it today, and I'll check it out later, Todd, I promise. Okay. Very good stuff over there on the Free Kick. But again – the Andre Blake save is just perfect timing, because I don't know if you saw that thing going around about Petrovic getting sent overseas to Chelsea, and someone on Twitter posted that Petrovic is the best MLS goalie in history.
Stop, and Mike. You're falling for his tricks. This is what he wants. It's the interaction and the awful. Son of a gun's
and
getting
I hate it. And I hate it because it's just trolls that, you know, kind of do that little crap. But still, it's amusing that of all days, when people are going around saying, why is this guy saying this? Blake shows again why he is Andre Blake. But no, I thought, again, they were fortunate. I do think that the game changed significantly when Jose Martinez got taken out. The game just lost some fluidity moving forward up the field. I know, obviously, he was a big factor of that second goal as well down the right side of the field. But I was kind of upset that we didn't see Quinn Sullivan. And we talked about this right before we came onto the studio, Jose. When Jose Martinez goes down, which I think was like the 35th minute, give or take, I would have preferred to see Bueno slot into the six like he was against Nashville. And he did very well against Hany Mukhtar then, and have Quinn Sullivan on the right-hand side. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on how the team handled that change, but also if you had agreed with putting Quinn out there.
Yeah, I would have agreed with you. In fact, I apologize to Todd, who finally got to experience sitting next to me during a match, which is not a comfortable thing. I move quite a bit, and I get too excited even for press decorum. But I leaned over to him and I said, you know, I don't know about this. I feel like, you know, especially with the way that we have seen Leon, and credit to him, he did, I think, a fantastic job with what he had to do on this match. But as a six, he has had some really, really rough performances but to see him do as well as he did was great. But I agree with you, you know, to bring Sullivan in, because he did end up coming in at what, the 89th minute or something like that.
It was like this. That's the thing. I don't, you know how much I like Quinn.
I know, so you do. You got a tattoo of him.
I do. I'm working on it, right? It's a sleeve. It's the whole Sullivan family going up the arm. Well, listen, what's that? His younger brother, Kaven, right? That's going to be a good tattoo one day to get. No, but I struggle to find reasons why Sullivan can't get more time. That's it. I want to see him play more often. He's shown a lot of promise at net. I mean, you see him ripping shots like crazy. It's not like he's not trying to make an impact in the game. Where he disappears, he just doesn't seem to ever get minutes.
And it makes you wonder, right, when you continue to see and listen, I posted that video of Chris Donovan both on Twitter and on Reddit. I did not expect that much interaction with it, right, of Chris Donovan pushing that New England Revolution 2 guy after being, you know, awesome. Like, you know, his feet taken out of underneath him going up for a header. But when if you're seeing, you know, Chris Donovan go in your Sullivan, who has been grinding his teeth, you know, practicing with the Union, and sure, he's had performances and games with the Union too. You kind of wonder, you know, what's going through the kid's mind, right? And you'd think that he would be one of, if not the next man up, but obviously hard to tell. But I agree with you. It would have been nice to see him.
And Derek Smith, who's a fellow Union fan or commenter on Facebook in particular, he says, Flock is a natural DM, good at interceptions with the team, working on cylinders. I think he was perfect. And he says maybe Sullivan is on a three-year plan like Bueno. But the thing is, I don't disagree with that, Derek. I know he's still a young player developing. But at the same time, he's so highly touted by this franchise. And he's constantly doing well in the U.S. Youth National Team, though he didn't get as much time during their last run to the World Cup. You just have to wonder what – I mean, you know it's not his motor. You know he's you see him play at a high level with the press and all. So it's not like he's lazy out there. It's just confusing for me. As somebody who's maybe not as tactically advanced as you guys are, Todd is, et cetera, I just don't see it. I don't get why he's not getting more time. But, Dave, what are your thoughts on the sub of Leon Flock, as well as how you thought they played once Jose went down? Who, by the way, Jose mentioned on Twitter that he seems to be okay. So yeah. Go ahead, Dave.
To be honest, I agree with the change and what was done, purely because I think, again, it just probably offers more balance, you know what I mean, to the midfield. They've just respect to Quinn Sullivan, but I think, you know, he's predominantly more of an attacking midfielder. And I think if you're sticking him out wide, he perhaps loses some of that balance, especially as you're reshuffling not one but two players. Of course, you're having to move Bueno more inside, you're then having to push Quinn out there and then job in. And perhaps I don't think he's as defensively well versed as perhaps Leon Flock is or Bueno is on that right hand side. I think, especially being 2-0 up as well, you sort of want to protect that lead. There was really, I could understand if perhaps it was two, if the unit were 2-0 down perhaps, and Martinez has gone off. I think, yeah, bring Sullivan on, you have more attacking options. But I think, you know, being 2-0 up, there isn't really a need to try and press the game. You want to go for a third, but there isn't really a need to perhaps hamper with what you've got defensively or your defensive shape to try and find the third goal to be a bit more attacking. You don't really need to. So I sort of agree with the change. And I think Leon, when he came on, had a solid game. He got stuck in, made some good challenges, made some good blocks. You know, kept things flowing, but he was fine in the middle. Again, I don't really think I heard his name said or didn't really seem too involved in terms of, you know, key highlights or anything, which is probably one of the main things you want to see from your holding midfielder. As long as if his name's not being mentioned, he's having a good game. And I thought Leon did very well when he came on. In regards to Quinn, again, he sort of said it's a highly talented player, and I think I sort of agree with him. Yes, Chris Donovan, I know Jim obviously has something there for Chris Donovan. I don't know what it is. You sort of think, yeah, maybe give Quinn that time with 25 minutes or 30 minutes left when Carranza came off. I mean, give him that time to go out and, you know, have half an hour to try and make an impact, try and have the team get a fourth and stake a claim perhaps to get more minutes. It's a weird one. I think Jim's, how he handles the younger players at the time is a bit inconsistent, perhaps. We saw it. I think we saw it last year with Jack McGlynn as well. Jack McGlynn would go through stints of playing off the bench and then, not even getting on the pitch or playing like a minute or two at the end of a game and then sort of was grown into it. And perhaps with, you know, Quinn being the younger of, you know, the three union academy players that's actually in the team, perhaps Jim's trying to perhaps ease him into it a bit slower. But I think we've seen that Quinn's a very, very good player. He's been, he's taken advantage of the minutes he has had when, well, substantial minutes. I mean, he looked very good when he started games. The other issue is, for the whole season, we've seen Mikhail Dilwar play 60 minutes, 60 minutes, 50 minutes, 60 minutes, 65 minutes. Even in the union losing games, he's been taken off the pitch. So, and he's then played 90 minutes in the last two games. So clearly his match fitness or his ability to play the full game isn't an issue. So I would be interested to see why Jim continuously brings him off. I think that is something that perhaps could be asked, I think, because I know obviously Jim's a very big, I know, of course, in terms of like bringing players off, he does like to make use of all five subs, likes to get people on the pitch. But I'm interested to know why he perhaps is so easy. He finds it so easy to bring Uar off, even when the team needs a goal or if the team is chasing the game. Like, for me, I just think it's a bit of a weird one, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, Uar's gone from barely making it past the hour to playing the full 90 minutes in back-to-back games. So clearly his fitness isn't an issue.
Well, Derek mentioned Donovan's surprising when he gets in the right space, but can't make the right shot in the final third or the right pass in the same, which you saw last night. There was that little breakaway there where he had that 2-on-1 going to net, and you could tell he was kind of torn between shooting the ball and passing the ball. But listen, we saw Quinn come on against Nashville and started that game. We thought, wow, Quinn's really ripping the ball at the net, you know, he's doing well. Then he gets a great assist for Jose Martinez's goal at Super Park the next match over. So we said, wow, this might be the time where Quinn Sullivan takes these minutes and really makes the most of them. But he didn't really get any time in the League's Cup either, if I remember correctly. I don't think he got significant minutes. Now, when you're looking at what's the reasons why Uwao might be playing more, we also know Carranza is still coming off the hamstring injury. We know there's a lot of games right out in that, right? They have three games in 8 days, rather, excuse me. So maybe that's why Uwao is getting a little bit more minutes to give some Carranza some rest. Maybe because we didn't see Baribo at all on Saturday night, we're going to see more of him and Quinn Sullivan on Wednesday, and you'll give Uwao more of a rest and Carranza might get half. I don't know exactly how Jim's planning on shuffling this around, but I know, Jose, you asked about Baribo. And so I'll shoot it to you. How do you feel about him?
Yeah, you know, a couple of people were messaging me on Twitter because they knew I was in DC and that I was going to be, you know, right in front of the man himself, not Ty, but rather Jim, and you know, just to ask him what's going on. He's still in preseason, right? When you think about when he joined the Union, he would have been maybe on the just about starting, maybe second week of preseason, had he stuck around at his club. So he's still getting acclimated, still getting ready. But Jim's reasoning for not putting him in was that the game was pretty frantic, right? The last 20 minutes, the Union were sort of reeling back and having to chase the game per se in terms of, you know, the pressure, right? Having to chase after DC as they were sort of having to open up more and more to attack the Union and get something, especially with them being below the playoff mark and having to get wins at home with what they have left. So that was the reasoning. And, you know, credit to Jonathan Tannenwald for asking him, Mikel Uwa, how do you feel? And granted, it was after playing 89 minutes and leaning against the chair. Mikel assured us that, yeah, I'm feeling good. You know, I'm tired right now. I just played 89 minutes of high level football, but I'm good. You know, it's good. And I must admit, it was really refreshing to hear Mikel refer to the conversation that Jim mentioned to the press about the criticism, right? Having to pull Uwa aside and say, hey, listen, you know, this is not clicking, what's going on, et cetera. So Mikel acknowledged it, which is not something you hear from a lot of players, right? You often have these conversations, or my understanding is that players often have these conversations with players and they don't really, you know, air themselves out to the press or out in the open. But to hear Mikel sort of say, like, yeah, it wasn't clicking and now I'm sort of finding my form again. So I'm excited to continue. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't envision Ty really being involved on Wednesday. Maybe it might be more of a Sunday situation as he again continues to get. And frankly, I wouldn't even be surprised if, you know, Jim waits for the international break to come and go to finally give Ty a better chance to get fit, as I'm sure they'll resume practicing a little bit, or honestly, probably having a good, strong set of practices while, you know, I posted a little list of players that could get call-ups. It's a good chunk. Some of them are, you know, huge maybes, like Glesnes getting a call up, but you know, doesn't seem likely, though they're playing Jordan. I wonder if that's where Ty really gets his fitness in, right? That's international stretch where he can really get his body acclimated.
It's funny we talk about how Uwa has kind of started to come into his own a bit here these last couple of games, just seeing the back of the net, which is better than what we saw beforehand. You know, it's like the reverse of Trey Turner, right? Trey Turner's on an absolute tear right now after the standing ovation, but Jim Curtin says not good about Michael Uwao, and suddenly he's starting to kind of come into his own here. So it's funny how players react to different things, the way they get called out or not called out. But it is kind of, in very much hindsight, I think a lot of us were skeptical about League's Cup. A lot of us were questioning how good it would be for the players, the team, etc. If you have to look at it now, a week and a half later, there is a lot of positives we're taking from it. So first of all, Jack McGlynn has been playing a lot better. He scored again Saturday, so that's, you know, kudos to him. Jesus Bueno is finally getting a call up to the Venezuelan team. Clearly, his League's Cup performance, he had, what, 2 goals and 3 assists, and he had the PK, obviously made him stand out. Uwa starting to come to his own. He actually had, you know, he obviously had the goal against Monterrey's B team. Again, starting that building block to get the ball rolling here. But even Bedoya, I was worried when I saw Jose go down that Bedoya would come in and Bueno would shift to the six and you'd see, you know, Bedoya out there for 60 minutes when you know he's not 100%. You know he's not 100% yet.
Yeah. But
Jim Curtin did the right thing. He waited to bring Bedoya in. He did the right sub in that regard. So looking at it now in hindsight, you have to hope that these players really did benefit a lot from League's Cup, but Ua in particular. I mean, Carranza hasn't scored. Did he score in League's Cup at all, Carranza?
No. Maybe in the 5-1 game? Never look.
Because if he the fact that we have to question it tells you he didn't score enough in League's Cup. So if you know Gazdag, or Carranza rather, might be on a little bit of a slow streak, having Ua starting to get his form together is perfect timing. Because we really, as Jim Curtin has said multiple times, the team only goes as far as our strikers go. So again, I'm happy for Michael. I'm glad to see him get. Go ahead, Dave. You
got the, so he scored twice in the first game against Tijuana, and I believe he didn't score afterwards.
That doesn't count though. It's been too long at this point. Dave. So
and one injury.
And one injury. What?
And one injury. It's been too long and an injury to really count those two goals as a big part of the body of work. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. So it's good to see Ua again. Like I said, coming to his own there, and the press in general, and kind of being put to the front there on that first goal, and how deadly it can be when timed correctly. Now, in terms of the match on Wednesday. Now, I was talking to Kyle Almaney, who is half of the one team we agree on. Of course, his wife Jillian's the other half there. And he messaged me right before we went on today and said, hey, Wednesday, feels like a trap game, doesn't it? I'm like, it absolutely feels like a trap game. So, Dave, I'm going to ask you, what are your thoughts on Wednesday when we go to Toronto, an away match, but against a really struggling Toronto squad?
I think that's the thing, though. I think, again, we sort of sit here and you think it's a trap game. You look at the quality of players that they do have, like Bernadeschi and Insigne, like, I just don't know how it hasn't worked out, because I mean, like, Insigne for a long time was one of the best players in Italy, and just hasn't really, for him especially, and Bernadeschi had, I think, the lined up in this weekend, but I think the midweek set of MLS games, I think Bernadeschi scored twice and scored two really good goals, I think, which again shows how dangerous that he can be. I think Insigne is always a player that can be dangerous. Those two alone is enough to somewhat cause a bit of concern, and again, they're wild cards, and as we, as we alluded to, again, it is a trap game. I think you got players of that quality, like, we've seen other teams in the past in the MLS, especially like where perhaps they have been like crisis at the bottom of the league. I mean, when especially in the Western Conference, I mean, you see some of the teams at the bottom there, and they just haven't, they haven't got the quality of, they haven't got the quality of players like Bernadeschi and Insigne to call upon when they are in trouble. And I know Toronto struggled the last couple of years, but I think just having those two alone, again, just makes it a dangerous game, because if Insigne was to turn it on like that, we could easily just see another, I'm not going to compare him to Messi, but you could easily see him taking over a game similar to Messi in the way which, weaving through players, just taking the mick and easily scoring a couple of goals and putting Toronto ahead, like pushing Toronto on. So I think for the Union, it's definitely a game they need to be careful of. Don't get too high in the game from Saturday and just sharpen up defensively and continue to attack the way they did on Saturday. If they can sharpen it up a bit at the back, I think they should feel confident going into it.
I see the thing with me that I worry about Wednesday and a bit of the second half on Saturday is the lack of killer instinct. Now, we saw this a lot last year, and I know Jim has alluded to it, wanted to come back this season. Would this team needs to find that killer instinct again? They go up 3-0 against DC in the first half. They had maybe two or three chances, especially Chris Donovan's chance, to make it 4-0 or 5-0, and they didn't. So you know the Red Bulls match is on Sunday. You know that's a huge game just because it's New York. You know that they are dying to come back here after Jim Curtin's little bulletin board material he put on them in the League's Cup when they knocked
out. Oh my God, yeah.
So there's so much like kind of drama around that match already that you really worry that they're going to say, we can handle Toronto. Just put Donovan and Quinn up there up top. Don't even worry about Ua. Let him rest. Like, you don't want to see too much rest and too much transition or turnover rather on the lineup. Just to think you can go into Toronto and walk through it no problem. This very much feels like a game that could be 1-0 Toronto within the first 20 minutes. And now you're like, oh, shit, now we really have to try to earn at least a point. And then on top of that, Cincinnati is going to Atlanta, a very tough place to play right now. And we've seen this time and time again where the Union will have chances to climb the table. And you'll have teams like Cincinnati or Nashville or New England not performing at their level. Instead of finding that time to leapfrog and move up the stands, they do the same exact thing. Or they'll win when Cincinnati wins. So you need to see them. If they really want to push for the supporter shield, Wednesday is a massive opportunity to do that. Jose, I'll shoot to you.
Well, first and foremost, Phillies win. Second, I agree with you. I can see this being very much a what are we going to do to mess this up, right? Again, another golden opportunity ahead for us to continue to climb up. And again, not looking too far ahead, but September 16th, right? Cincinnati comes to Subaru Park, and that could be a big swing match to figure out who is going to win the supporter shield. And Thiago Almada might be having something to say to Cincinnati this week as they go to Atlanta. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. And also, I have to remember, Toronto's a team and going through a huge transition, right? Getting rid of their coach, hiring the national team head coach that just stepped down. So, and he's not taking over till October 1st. So he's sort of, you know, transitioning out of the national team to full-time Toronto. So players will want to impress, though I'm really intrigued on to if some big departures will happen in terms of some of the Italians. And I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't if Saudi Arabia, who has a longer transfer window than even Europe, sort of sniff around, right? This is a team that it might be falling apart and having to rebuild after, I think it was this team where the manager said, I don't know who they were, but I saw them on Football Manager or something like that, right? And he went ahead and bought both of them, or bought at least Bernadeschi, I think was the player referred by that. So it'll be interesting to see what Jim comes up with. Though I agree with you, Mike. I really hope that we don't go into it a little lax. To Derek's point, which you flashed for a second, Jim sort of touched on this, right? All it takes is for Carranza to, or Gastag have a brace, or Carranza go and have a hat trick, and this race is wide open. There is a possibility for one of the two guys to go ahead and insert themselves into the golden boot conversation. So I just wanted to touch on Derek's question or thought, whatever you want to call it.
I have the list in front of me right now from the Sporting News website, just what the first place I could find it. So Hani has 13 goals, Acosta has 12, Bouanga has 12, Espinoza and Giocomacas, I probably butchered that name, they have 12. Carranza has 10, Gazzaga has 10. Then you have a mix of Celarayan, Ferreira, et cetera, have 10 goals as well. So to your point, again,
it really... Or Celarayan's gone.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. Oh, excuse me. So, yeah, it really just comes down to, you know, a game like Toronto is a perfect chance to get a hat trick or a brace or whatever you want to get. Just even one more goal. And listen, I mean, these players, they might not admit it, but those individual accolades do matter. And the Golden Boot is something that I know Carranza and Danny are probably keeping their eye on. So I hope they can go in there hot, and I hope we can at least see one of them score, because that'd be exciting if you're not getting a supporter shield to see one of them kind of fight for the golden boot towards the end, like we saw last year with Gazdag and Mokhtar, right? He only lost by, what, 3 goals, something like that?
Yeah, it was very tight, and, you know, I can't put my finger on the stat, and this might be more of a ChatGPT question of how many penalty kick goals did Gazdag have last year?
I don't know. He has 9 this year out of his 10
right. goals. Which is bananas.
It very much is. So, in terms of lineup, guys, Wednesday, I don't want to go conservative. I hope they don't park the bus and just trying to, you know, play the defense here. I don't know if Damian Lowe will be back. I know we had rumored online that he was away for a family passing. A member had passed away, right, Jose? Something like that?
Yeah, media? That's what somebody referred to. There's no confirmation, and quite frankly, it completely... I don't know that I would have asked Jim. I don't, if that is the case, I'm not sure that it's my place to ask. Yeah. Where was Damian? Right. Like, yeah. I don't know. I didn't feel too comfortable, but I think we can go ahead and guess that might be it, though. I don't know if he'll be back.
Agreed. So Dave, what are your thoughts on the lineup? I know we had a couple players from the Union play on the Union 2 game this past weekend, including their new defensive center back. I could not pronounce his name if I tried. I know Donovan played, and I know Raffanello played. So what do you think for the lineup on Wednesday? Dave.
You're muted, Dave.
You're muted, Dave. See there, Todd, we got you back there. We muted him on purpose. That's for you. Go ahead, Dave.
I can see the Union probably going with the one change. flocking for Martinez. Again, I think I can't see them taking the risk with Jose this weekend. I mean, especially if it is a muscle injury. But don't really, you know, he says he's fine, but if he really is or not, who knows? I don't think anyone's really heard a proper diagnosis yet. So I wouldn't want to risk Jose. So I could see them starting Flock from the, you know, from the off. To be honest, I wouldn't have an issue. I just think as long as they're more solid defensively, for me, that's just not, that's all I really care about. I mean, the foundations were there.
Jose, how about you?
Hold on. Here's an answer from Todd. 7 of the 22 last year were from the spot. So he's already surpassed that penalty wise. So that's fascinating. Thank you, Todd.
Just another interesting statistic for guys that quality. He's also in the hunt for the, like, the lead assist. He's only 3 off Thiago Almada. So I mean, a couple of you know, personal accolades that he, you know, might have his eye on.
Has a player ever led the league in both MLS and goals and assists?
Well, we might get it this year with Acosta.
I mean, Derek also asked, Dave, how are you staying awake? He's not awake. There's actually somebody with puppet strings behind him.
Why it's black behind him.
That's why it's black. He's just the puppet master back there. that's funny. I am curious to know about the lineup. I do wonder if I don't think they go 3 in the back. I think Jim has had that experiment. He didn't like the way it worked out against League's Cup. I think that's why he's gravitating more towards 4 in the back now as of late, especially with Damian Lowe being out. I don't think he does that weird formation where you put Kai on the left center back and he put Matt Rattle. I don't think it's going that much change. And I also don't think you're going to see Bedoya playing a full 90 on Wednesday, especially with a Red Bull match on Sunday. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, and you know, I was going to comment on that when we were talking about DC, but I think we finally found that. And I know Jim wants to continue to expand Bedoya's role. I personally don't think that he should be starting at this stage in his career. And again, I don't want to preface it every single time, but we know what he has done for this club, the city, etc. So I say that with all that, you know, that caveat in mind. But he did great, right? Came in the 67th minute, I think, 60th minute or so, and had a, you know, I think he missed one pass the entire evening. I can't recall him doing too much wrong in the later stages of the match. He was there defensively, tried his best, etc. So for me, in terms of lineup, I think it's, there you go. Yeah, Giovinco, that makes sense. In terms of the lineup, I would think that it stays fairly similar, though I would probably see Harrell coming out for Mbaizo. Just a very, very gym move of like, yeah, Nate having a great game and then bringing in Mbaizo.
Also, Nate always starts against Red Bull. But go ahead.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I wonder if that's a matchup thing. I haven't even thought about that. I'm not even thinking about Sunday yet. So, yeah, I would think that. And then, as Dave mentioned, Flock starting at the 6, Bueno, McGlynn left and right there in the middle, Gazdag up top. And I'm interested to hear tomorrow. I don't know if somebody will ask. I'm not sure if I can even attend the press conference, but how Carranza is feeling, right? Jim told us at the post-match press conference about how they assessed Julian, how he was feeling at halftime, and he was good to go for a little bit longer.
They said 15 minutes.
Yeah. So I wonder how he's feeling and if Jim is just going to be cautious and just, hey, let's just take a game off or maybe just, you know, maybe this is the Sullivan opportunity. Maybe this is someone else. I'm not sure. Definitely not a tie start, but, you know, someone else coming in and being involved in that spot. But I think it's going to stay similar. But I additionally hope that Damian Lowe is able to come back. I think it would be nice to give him a shout at some point. Here in these busy stretches, obviously we play Wednesday, then Sunday, then is it 2 weeks? A 2 week break? Week break? And then we go back at it again. Yeah, 2 week break.
To compare the two schedules, just for argument's sake, so we're talking about Cincinnati and the Supporter Shield race. They're playing Atlanta at Atlanta on Wednesday, and then they play Orlando in Cincinnati on the 2nd, and then they come to us on the 16th of September. So I don't think Orlando goes into Cincinnati and takes a win, but then maybe they draw. If we're hosting, you know, we're obviously playing a much weaker Toronto squad. We're hosting the Red Bull. We feel very confident, or at least I feel confident, you can get 6 points out of that. If Cincinnati can only get 1 point out of these next two matches, then that September 16th match against them is massive. I mean, absolutely massive. So you really have to at least, at the very least, draw against them, especially at home. You have to at least draw. I already see you shaking your head. What is it, Jose?
No, I agree with you. I mean, I was on Pat Bernard's and Austin and Gustavo's show last week with Roberto Vinces of WFMC. I got to meet him. Very kind guy. Incredible smile as well, as pearly white as they get, by the way. But talking with them of like, listen, you know, I don't think you guys are really thinking about it too much. But, you know, we have September 16th. We have a game in hand. And we just witnessed Cincinnati not only lose to a very strong Columbus team, but collapse against Miami, you know, in the most like union way possible, right?
I love that type of collapse. It was so union 2.0. I loved it. And Derek says, don't you think Elliott and Wagner need to rest? Usually in this stretch, Wagner has yellow card accumulation as well. I don't think they can afford to rest them just because with Lowe out right now, and I don't think they trust Real at the moment to in the game they really need to win, to be frank with you.
Outside of soccer, you also got to remember that we might be vying, going back and forth with Wagner in terms of a contract. So resting him when he doesn't want to be rested may not be great. Just putting that out there, right, as an external factor onto why we may play the hell out of him the next few games until hopefully he doesn't break, but he just bends a little bit.
Yeah, I get it. Listen, I get it. I mean, we'll talk about the Red Bull match a little bit now here. As we discussed a few minutes ago, Jim kind of had that bulletin board material. Actually, when I spoke on the New York Post with Brandon London.
Small flex.
Twice.
Small flex, everybody.
Twice I've been there. No, not a big deal. I know. In all reality, I do hope that Brandon reaches out to me this week because I would like for him to come down to Super Park. He mentioned a couple times he wanted to come down to Chester. So it'd be cool to have him, you know, coming down and hanging out with us at the press box or the tailgate. But when we talked to him then, he mentioned, hey, listen, your coach is calling out Red Bull. And it's like, yeah, I mean, that team is still struggling, still trying to find their way up the table. I know they have it circled. So the Red Bull match, Dave, do you think we fare well against a team we've done very well against recently, but you have to lose eventually to your rivals? That's my concern. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from there, but I think, you know, it's getting close in there for the playoff race as well. I mean, again, Jim's bulletin board comments probably haven't helped the situation, which isn't exactly ideal for the team. I think that will be something, you know, they'll probably have hung up on the dressing room heading into that game. But I mean, I think the Eagles are like 13-0. Ever against the Jets, the Eagles never lost to the Jets in like the 6 years they've been playing each other. Of course, it's probably more a little less regular. But I mean, I think the Eagles probably should feel confident going into the game. They still got a very, very good home record. The Red Bulls have been very inconsistent this year, so you don't really know what sort of team is going to turn up. The Union could produce a performance like they produced yesterday against DC, who have caused them issues, or, you know, we could see a repeat of the League's Cup game, where it was a very close affair, and the Union were a bit lucky to probably come out with the win on penalties. I mean, the Red Bulls could have easily probably come out in that game with the win, so I think, you know, you've just got to take each game as it comes around. I think, again, these rivalry games are so predictable. It's cliche as it sounds. Anything can happen. So, yeah.
No, the Rebel are currently in 11th place at 29 points. They're right below DC right now. And Valor says, at least Yearwood has struck again. That's, you know, it's funny. I actually said that on Twitter. He came into the match against us, I think, last in League's Cup, Valor. And I said on Twitter, everybody in the front row, watch out, because Yearwood is in the match now. So keep your heads on a swivel out there. We'll have to bring helmets for the people in the front row. So the Red Bulls are 11th place right now. Like I said, 29 points. Philly's obviously 43rd. I didn't realize that DC has fallen down to 10th place. Because I know we had talked about how they were kind of on that playoff line push. They're down to 30 points now. They're only two points back out of Chicago, who's in 9th place because of the expanded playoff picture. I forgot about that stupid expansion.
Yeah, and that's what we talk with Mario, right? That DC United, this game, I had sort of mentioned to Mario in the show and predicted that there's no reason for DC to be holding back and play defensive like they have, right? Outside of maybe earning a point, there's absolutely no reason for them to hold back. And again, the Union don't do well when teams sit back and you know, collapse in. We need them to stretch themselves out, and us scoring first sort of forces them to stretch themselves out. And again, as we continue to do the counterattacking stuff. So yeah, DC has no room for error.
No, it's funny how if you're looking at last year's playoff picture, only top seven making the playoffs. Nashville sits at seventh spot with 38 points. Montreal has 35 points, and Chicago, who's in the ninth spot, has 32 points. So you have Chicago, DC, New York, and Charlotte all within 3 points of each other, vying for that final ninth spot. So the playoff push is now so much greater. Basically, every single team except for Miami and Toronto have a chance to make the playoffs. That's 13 of the 15 teams. That's ridiculous.
Don't say that too loud, because again, the most union way for us to crash out of this playoff is somehow finding ourselves against Miami again.
Here's what's going to happen. The Union are going to win the Supporter Shield. We're going to host Miami and lose first round. You're for Dave, what are some thoughts on anything else with the Red Bull, or what do you think the formation will look like come Red Bull? Because, you know, they're going to go four in the back, Harry Osman on the right.
Now you said that. Livian Barza will be there.
You think so? Jim's going to reverse psychology all of us. Go ahead, Dave.
You're going to have Livian Barza. Yeah, just casually starting. Yeah, I think probably I won't be shocked to see a diamond again. I think that's probably the Union's go-to formation now between now and the end of the season. I think Jim himself has probably seen, you know, the cracks starting to show in the back three and how teams began to expose the Union's back three. I think, again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, the Union's defensive issues have gone on for a while, not just in the game just gone. They've looked very weak, really poor in the back three. They've looked so open, so exposed. And I think, of course, Damian Lowe's injured, but I don't think Damian Lowe coming into this team, even in the back four, would solve how weak it is. I don't think he is the answer in that situation. I think, to be fair, in the back three, he was probably the one that was most exposed on that left-hand side. Team sort of targeted that left-hand side in a couple of games.
And that's amazing to hear, though, because Jim said literally a month ago, we do not lose when Damian Lowe plays in this lineup. It's amazing how things have now turned. So you just said, Dave, I don't think he's been playing very well, but a month ago, he was like the biggest acquisition we've made in a couple of years.
Go ahead, Dave, go ahead. You finished your thought.
I know, so I just think, just look at the games. I think even like the Red Bulls game and DC game, like that left-hand side was just targeted. They just got so many. I think the Red Bulls goal did come from Damian Lowe being out of position or sort of being caught out on that left-hand side. And yeah, I don't know. I think perhaps he just didn't suit a back three in certain situations. Who knows? But I just think it's concerning just how easily the Union have been carved open in recent weeks. And maybe that isn't just a Damian Lowe issue, but I just don't think he perhaps has been as solid at the back in terms of defensively as we have seen in previous games, especially during that 10-game unbeaten stretch.
Maybe it's a case of recency too, right? What's the last thing you actually remember of Damian Lowe? For me, it's the shocker of a game he had against Miami, right? And that's the last time last time we've watched him. So it very well could be that we're all just remembering that, and he just needs to cleanse that palate and just start over. And maybe Toronto's it, maybe Red Bull's it. Who knows when he comes back after whatever's going on with him and his family, et cetera. So I don't know. I still think he has been sort of a, you know, you think about the three pieces that we brought in this year, I still think that he's sort of the bright spot of all the additions to the roster this year. When you think about, you know, Torres and Perea, who's out in New York, and I don't think he's featured yet. I haven't even looked if he's been on the bench, but nonetheless, it's, you know, just sort of keep that in mind, right? The last time we watched him was what left that really, really sour taste in our mouth.
Yeah, and listen, it's hard to argue that he has been one of the better players on the team in general, not even just the acquisitions. He had really strong performances. And against Red Bull in particular, you know it's going to be a very heated match. It's always very chippy. You want someone like Damian Lowe's presence and attitude to be on the field because you know he brings a lot of good, positive energy that way as well.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah, and I'll put the comment up after you ask the question. Go ahead.
Does it seem like, and Jim has sort of alluded to this, especially this last press conference, and I'm referring to this press conference because I've never been this close and personal to Jim. If you were in DC, it was in Todd. There you go. Todd just mentioned Perez started against Cincinnati this weekend, and they got spanked. I remember this press conference very, very well. A, it was away, and B, Jim was literally 2 feet away from me on a table with a laptop in front of him, just talking to us. So he sort of referred to, you know, in some areas we've improved or we're improving, but in other areas we've regressed. Do you think it's he's referring to the defensive side of the ball on our end, right? Seeing a lot more or fewer clean sheets and just, again, having one too many shocker of games, right, as a whole defensively? I mean, do you think that's what the area he's referring to?
Go ahead, Dave. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, great. Giving up so many clear-cut chances as well. I think that's something we haven't really seen from the Union, even like in road games. Like, again, like the Miami game, they lost 2-0, but I think those are pretty much the only two chances Miami had the entire game. Like, the Union typically defensively haven't been the team to, like, gift teams opportunities, and we saw that in the League's Cup, you know, the goal against Querétaro, literally just leaving the guy on his own at the back post from 6 yards just to head it across the goal. I can't remember the Union doing that regularly or that often. Even against Tijuana, they were just shocking defensively against Tijuana. They couldn't escape their own, they couldn't get out of their own way at the start of that second half. And even spells in the first, moments in the first half, like, I can't remember the Union being so, they're just so poor defensively. I think, I imagine it is something that Jim is alluding to.
Now, a couple comments before I make my addition to that. So Derek says, I think our formation pushes our CBs too far wide and gives them too much area to make up. Jimmy King, by the way, who's an awesome writer. It's the Philly Sports Network, right? I believe is PSN. Is that the official title? Jimmy, if I'm wrong, please correct me. But if you don't follow Jimmy, he's an awesome guy, both in person and online. He says last three at home against Red Bull, one win against PKs and Leagues Cup, two draw with Red Bull down to 10 men, and three was Glesson's 120-minute winner in OT. Zero wins in regulation. Got to get 3 points Sunday, gentlemen. Great show. So that's a great point by Jimmy. It's a these games against Red Bull are just always tight, and you know it's going to come to the final minute, or it's going to end up in a draw, which is not exactly what you want to see. And he says, yes, Philly Sports Network. Okay, perfect. Make sure I got that correctly. Todd says, defense has regressed. Gazdag not scoring from open play, and Carranza missing a lot of sitters. Those sitters are killing us. I know 100%, massive. Todd, absolutely.
Yeah. So it was a massive miss he had on I know he was offside, but again, just to not even hit the target, the center of the box from where he was just embarrassing.
And no, I agree. Go ahead, Dave.
It's, again, that's probably been another concerning thing this year. I think Carranza, I don't think he's regressed as a player, but I think perhaps hasn't been as cutthroat, as lethal, as impactful as he was in his first couple of years, I think.
You could argue the whole team, though, isn't
it? Yeah.
You could see Baribo being the starter, the piece that really gets these guys to have to turn it the hell on, right? You have somebody who Mikel Ua mentioned post-game, you know, Ty is coming in and doing his thing. He's a great finisher. We're excited to have him, and obviously it's going to be a competition. So I wonder if Ty is what's going to get these guys to sort of get it together. And I wonder how much of, you know, Carranza's mental or misses, right? These sitters, I don't want to say mental issues. That's not what I mean whatsoever, and probably the wrong term to use, but his issues with taking advantage of these situations he finds himself in. I wonder if it has to do with, again, the constant rumors of him being the next man out in terms of, you know, transfers being someone that the Union might cash in on, etc. So just interesting to see that might be an area where we regressed.
Yeah. Also, can I just say the three of them up top don't really have to prove themselves anymore? And what I mean by and that's important. We talk about competition. We saw the competition between Nathan Harriel and Olivier last year and how well those two played off that competition. I mean, you can argue Bueno McGlynn, obviously, you know, taking over the Bedoya spot and Flock basically being worked out lineup. But you know Ua, Carranza, and Gazdag are going to start every single match. There's no sense of fear that they're going to lose their jobs. When you look at last season, you know, Ua's kind of, you know, getting his first year under his belt. Gazdag is 1 year after being called Gasbag from the year prior. Carranza obviously has a giant chip on his shoulder coming from Miami. So they all had something to prove last year, while this year they don't really have that same level of, I have to show you why I deserve to be a starter in this league. So maybe Ty is that. Ty is that guy who says, hey, guys, if you both start slipping up, you know, I'm going to take your starting role. And he has the credentials to do that. But on top of that, in terms of the regression, you're talking about defensive regression. Jim mentioned this before the match, or after the match, rather. They've played 38 games so far this year. Last year, they played 38 games, and they finished on November 5th. It's August 28th. today.
And they go to December 9th.
And they go through December 9th. Yeah. So if you're talking about defensive regression, how much of defense is effort and stamina and having your legs under you, right? Yeah. It's very much an energy-based part of the game.
The optimist in me says, though, and this is me very much being three quarters full and a cup of water here, but I think it's okay, right, that right now we're regressing in a way, right? Because we don't want to get hot now. We want to start leading into the playoffs to start getting warm, et cetera. And I'm not going to make the comparison of baseball, et cetera. That's a tired comparison. But nonetheless, I'm okay with the team finding itself now and building their way. And ultimately, they have to, especially if they want this damn tournament to run through us. And again, referring back to Jim's press conference, it took the most wild tiebreaker to take away the final from Subaru Park. So I don't think that Jim wants to take any chances again.
Yeah, it's a fair point. So let's wrap up the show. We got a couple. I know we all have one more thing we want to say. So we'll do a final thought after the sponsors. I'm going to read the sponsors off real quick and actually put up Todd's comment real quick before I go to the sponsors. Todd says, yes, Jose, MLS is about getting hot at the right – or Jimmy – or sorry, Jimmy says it's about getting hot at the right time. So, I mean, listen, we're in second place in the East. We can't complain too much, but we are nitpicking now, trying to get this team to the next level. So go through the sponsors. I think they've changed since I last talked, but we're going to go with what we have in front of me here. We have statementgames.com for a funny way of fantasy sports entertainment. You win gift cards and prizes. Free to sign up at statementgames.com. You have Don Distillery, the Trolley Barn Public Market in Quakertown. Go to DonDistillery.com to check out their wide variety of drinks and spirits. You have Vinny's Pizza and Restaurant in Allentown, PA. Discover a new favorite by trying their top pizzas and so much more. Or check out their new website, ebonyspizzarestaurant.com. You also have Stuff to the Grills at 6750 Iroquois Trail No. 5 in Allentown, PA. Or at stufftothegrills.com, they have homemade hot and cold sandwiches, salads, appetizers, baked goods, and more available for any event. I know, Jose, you're hosting the Gillingham Watch Party for their match tomorrow, right, in the second round of the Cup. We're going to be calling up Stuff to the Grills to host that and cater that event. Then you have, of course, the Across the Pitch gear and all AAT Sports Network gear at aatsportsnetwork.com/shop. And lastly, that's everything. Oh, check out Marguerite Studio at Marguerite Studio on IG.
Who's going to text her, Mike?
I haven't. This is like our running joke now. You're going to text her? I'm going to text her. We're not tech. We'll have to text her.
Hey, Mike, though, talking about hosting parties, yeah. I will be the union advertised a watch party at in Malvern for Wednesday. I will be there with my 3-year-old and my one cousin that has been going to a lot of games with me this year. So if you find yourself in Malvern for the game to watch, I think it's a Chickie and Pete's, or I can't remember. It might be whatever. Come and say hello, sit together, get some wings, get some beer, etc. We'll have fun and hopefully watch the Union beat Toronto.
I will be in Marlton on Wednesday, but on Saturday, you and I, Jose, or Sunday, we'll both be at the game for Red Bull, right? You'll be there?
It's tripping me up that it's on a Sunday. I can't remember the last time we've had a Sunday game outside of, you know, not in the MLS league season. I'm sure Todd and Jimmy are probably like, you're an idiot, here's when. But yeah, I can't remember the last time we've had a Sunday game for the Union that's not outside of the competition, the regular season.
I kind of love it. I'm not. I already got my babysitter. We're all set to go. We're good to go. I'll be there bright and early. I'll be there early on Sunday at the tailgate, by the way. So it's gonna be a good time. So let's do our final thought, and we've got a runoff and end the show. Dave, final thought before the Union take on Toronto Wednesday.
I think final thought is just again, just win the game. I think just do the job that you know you've got to go out and do. I think these are the games, especially when they're not only you know go far on the playoffs, but if you want to win the support shield or win the support shield, try and leapfrog Matt Cincinnati. These are the games you have to win. Mm-hmm. Trap game or not, this is a game you have to win. And even if it's not a very encouraging performance, as long as they come out with a win, that's sort of the cause they sort of related to. It's about getting hot at the right time. Like if they can get in, they can win and get out of Toronto and go into the Red Bulls game with a win, even if it's a poor result. So be it. They've gotten 3 points. That's all that matters at this late stage of the season, especially trying to pick up the points and hope that the performances follow. Just a quick point, obviously, with the regression thing as well. I think this season reminds me a lot of course, this team's a lot more talented than that 2021 team that were the CONCACAF, that were in the CCL. But like, it reminds me a lot of that in terms of like, how impactful certain players are or were, or how far they fell like, or them falling off, like Gazdag has alluded to. I think nine has only scored one from open play, haven't been so impactful last season. Look at it, like players like Jamiro Montero, of course, he ended up leaving sort of midway inside that season. But again, he struggled with consistency and didn't really have the same impact. Shabirko fell off a cliff. Like, I'm not saying that, again, this team's a lot more talented, but there's sort of a similar trend of certain players perhaps not performing or, you know, not taking the chances they should have. I mean, I don't know, perhaps it is a workload thing or something, but yeah, it's frustrating to see when we know how good this team can be, that they have somewhat regressed to normal levels.
Agreed. Jose, how about you?
Again, you know, I don't know how else to express it. Just very, very thankful of what we're building, right? I think it's an awesome and funny anecdote. I was walking through campus at the college I work at, and I'm a major gift officer, so my job is to hold a lot of one-on-one meetings, and I'm walking with a donor who might be able to give us a gift of $100,000, and I'm walking by our security office just sort of on pins and needles as I'm talking to this guy who's very, very important. And out of nowhere, I didn't realize this, our security guard at Ursinus comes up to me and he says, "I love your coverage. I appreciate what you do on Twitter." And of course, this guy who I'm walking with, this donor, is like, "What do you do on Twitter?" So I had to explain to him what the Philadelphia Union are and what I've been doing in terms of coverage, et cetera. So long way to say, you know, I'd really appreciate, and I think we all do, fair enough to speak for both of you, that, you know, we appreciate all of the kind comments, the content that you guys like and appreciate, and ultimately giving us a lot of opportunities to open doors. I'm hopeful that, you know, the work that we've been doing will be enough to get me through the door for coverage of the Mexican national team when they're in Philadelphia on mid-October. So again, just a huge, huge thank you to all of you for following, covering, for reading our stuff. And again, consider supporting us, independent content creators. It means a lot when you like, you share, you comment, etc. The algorithms are not always kind, so we need all the help that we can.
Yeah, and Jimmy says, appreciate you guys, all your work, support independent journalism. Again, Jimmy, Philly Sports Network, Todd, the Free Kick Pod, Kyle and Jillian, the One Team We Agree On, Skylar Hoffner at the Union Nation. We can go on about all these great guys and girls that we work with every single week on Twitter and get to see and tailgate with as well. So Derek says, thank you. Valerie says, I'm sure that sealed the deal with the gunnery. Damn right it did.
It made the conversation over lunch very interesting because he asked me to show him the videos that I've been putting together, et cetera. So here I am hopping, passing my phone back and forth at this lunch, just all sort of like blushing.
And Todd says, we appreciate everybody's work. Jose is not so much. I know. He's the one that's bringing us down, Todd, for sure.
I make us, as the Ben and Blazers would say, I make us the most suboptimal.
Exactly. No, it's funny. We talk about regression and how subjective that can be. The Union are in second place in the Eastern Conference. They are second in the conference in goal differential and third in the MLS in goal differential. And yet we are saying they are regressing because last year was so dominant and such a record-breaking season. So take it take a little grain of salt there. We're still
Standards. The standards are higher.
Yeah, and for my final thought, I want the standards to get back to that killer instinct. I like winning. I do, but I want to see them beat the shit out of teams. And that's what I missed from last year. I like to see the cutthroat mentality. So I'm hoping that we see that now as September is here. You know, September is here. The push for the playoffs is starting. But otherwise, to kind of piggyback off my two co-hosts, thank you all for joining us tonight. This is Across the Pitch. We're on every single Monday night, 8:45 p.m. We'll be covering the match on Wednesday on Twitter. And then Sunday afternoon, I guess. Jose and I will be there bright and early on that Sunday afternoon at Super Park to cover the match, to drink with you fine people. And Sean says, shout out to Jose from his high school teacher.
Mr. Gaston. Oh, he was incredible. He was so, so great. And Mrs. Castiglione, who used my tickets for one of the games in Leagues Cup. She had a wonderful time. So Mr. Gaston, if we can, I say Mr. like he, I'm still a student, but Mr. Gaston, I would love to connect with you at the stadium. Just don't look out for me shirtless in 140.
Yes, which we've all seen now, and I'm not complaining about it. I've sat right now. So anyway, guys, happy Monday night. Appreciate it. Go Union.
Good night.